Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders. Stone, quite a show we got here today.
Good afternoon, sir. Yes, it certainly is. This is going to be an exciting segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with a gentleman who is no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. We have with us President CEO of VDART Inc., Sid Ahmed. So we're going to get a chance to catch up with him in a little bit. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO of Decision Link. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Jim Berryhill. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much for the opportunity to be here today.
Now, Decision Link, what are you guys doing for folks?
We enable our customers to build business case content for their selling activities in a fraction of the time that it takes using traditional manual labor type efforts.
So you have some magic wand that helps the sales process along?
Yeah, it's programmatically something we built that we've worked on for quite a while. Not quite magic.
Now, this is geared to business, right? Not business to consumer?
That's correct. Complex sales, mm-hmm. Enterprise business to business. And in the Americas, estimated about 4 million selling professionals fit in that category.
Really? Yep. So there's 4 million people selling or 4 million businesses that are selling B2B?
4 million sales professionals.
Wow.
People selling. Yep.
So in designing case studies, what are some of the common mistakes? Because you must see some of the same patterns over and over when you go into a client. What are some of the common mistakes you see folks making?
What happens is that companies are doing this activity manually, mm-hmm. one sales rep, one deal at a time. And so if they do 100 of them, they end up with 100 inventions of the wheel.
And so the salesperson probably gets, this isn't their favorite part of their job, right?
It's not only not their favorite part of their job. Salespeople aren't trained to do this. It's financial work, industry work, mm-hmm. A lot of acumen that we don't train sales guys to do. I've been a sales guy all my life. We're a bit ADD. So we're not really created for the work either. And a part of what Decision Link does is bakes that expertise into a system that produces for the sales rep rather than doing it one at a time. Bakes in best practices, et cetera.
So I would think, obviously, there's tremendous value in terms of selling services to be able to reflect on a business case and share it with a potential client. But I would also think, just in terms of harvesting data from the engagement or data from the relationship, that's a good way to train salespeople and for salespeople to get prepared for another client is to go back and look at their company's case studies, yeah?
We call it making a great sales call.
Okay.
And so a great sales call would be one where the salesperson is talking to a prospective buyer about what the buyer cares about.
Yeah,
there's an idea.
Well, you should write that down.
Radical.
Capture that, Kevin.
Radical idea, yeah. But a great sales call, and great sales calls are based on, focus on the buyer and what they care about, and, B, a significant body of experience. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm a sales guy that's got 20 years of experience and so on and so forth, I'm going to have maybe more experience and acumen, I hope, than a guy that's six months into the job, so on and so forth. But taking the ingenuity of the new guy, the experience of the old guy, the subject matter experts content, and baking that into a repeatable mm-hmm. capability to execute all the time, that's what we bring to the table.
So now when this typical, but before you existed, this person was going out into the world, knocking on a door, this doesn't help them get the meeting, right? This helps them once they have the meeting?
Well, it actually helps them get the meeting. Think in terms of a cold call, an initial call to a potential buyer, of having that conversation being something along the lines of, hi, Joe, I'm Jim with Decision Link. We thought about your business compared to other businesses like yours. We've been able to help in these areas. Is that an issue for you? We think it looks like this for you. as opposed to, hi, Joe, I'm Jim, we do this
and
this.
Yeah, I got this cool tool that you might be able to use.
Yeah, I got this, I got this shiny thing. That's right. And one of our customers said, what we do is we will engage with a customer prospect and say, okay, I'm going to start talking. Stop me when you hear something you like.
Right.
Which is just crazy, but that's what the salespeople do.
That's what historically they've typically done.
Right.
So now with your tool, before they make the call, they're doing some research, right, because they have to plug in some blanks, right, in your device or this
right.
It's software as a service, right? So they have to kind of fill in some blanks so they can come to this potential buyer with some valuable information.
Yeah, so the process looks something like this, and it goes about as fast as I'm going to describe it right now. I look up my account.
Mm-hmm.
I identify the product or products that I want to sell to this account, assuming I have multiple products.
Right.
I identify the industry my prospective customer's in, who I'm competing against, the persona of who I'm calling on, some other variables that might be particular here. Press what we call the Get Precise button. Press a button and produce a rich body of content that otherwise would take several days or even weeks of specialists to produce. And now I've got the content that I need to have insight, understanding of what I can do for that prospect and can account plan, can make great sales calls, can weed out accounts that,
so you can put that data in and you're like, you know what, we're probably not a good fit for these guys.
Bingo. We talk about in sales management about, you know, what does your pipeline look like? It looks like anything that's moving, we're chasing.
That's right.
And there's a significant amount. In fact, research from an organization called CSO Insights, they just published their 2014 survey of about 1,400 chief sales officers. 54% of the deals forecast to close in those organizations are lost. And a big part of that is chasing stuff that you shouldn't be chasing, spending time
right.
on. So exactly that, yep.
So you can accelerate, even automate to a large extent this whole process. Is the trend moving more and more toward prospective clients doing a great deal of research and learning a lot more about you before you ever get that face-to-face meeting? Because I get the sense that it is.
No question. 20 years ago, 10 years ago, the sales rep's job was to educate the buyer or prospective buyer about their product, services, capabilities.
Right.
When you show up for that first sales call, they know probably more than the sales rep does at that initial point of engagement.
Because they're not agreeing to a meeting unless they've kind of vetted you a little bit.
Typically, yeah. I mean, if an organization, there's a lot of research that says organizations are 60% of the way through a typical buying cycle before they even engage a sales professional. So, yeah, they've weeded out. You would assume that when you show up at that point, they are at their short list of two or three.
Because mm-hmm. They don't have the time to vet 10 vendors.
They've already done it.
Right.
But they do it on the front end before they even call you in. That's right. So a couple of points to that. One is when you show up, they may already have the winner decided.
Oh,
they
wow.
may already know who the winner is going to be, but they do have to have a full suite of competitors to say they
right.
did their job, right? So when you show up, if you're the winner, you need to protect the winner's position. You don't know you're the winner, but you need to protect that position. And if you're not the winner, you need to do something different. And the something different is to have a business-oriented conversation as opposed to, yeah, hi, I sell this stuff that you're looking at. The other scenario is in saying when it's not that case that you have an initial call with a provocative engagement. Book recently published by a couple of executives at the corporate executive board called The Challenger Sale is the vogue today. Some would say it's not that much different than selling to veto and some other methodologies, but it's basically about bringing fresh ideas, challenging ideas, provocative content so that you'll get engaged and you'll be on the front end of a selling cycle. In either case, having insight into a customer prospect is the key, and that's what we designed our system to enable.
Now, can you talk a little bit about your backstory? Like, how much scar tissue did you build up before you came up with this idea?
Wow.
It's only an hour show at Max, right?
Yeah.
It's a highlight.
It sounds like there's you took away some of the learning curve for other people.
So in sales management, I closed 125 quarters for publicly traded software companies. I'm not a young guy. I've got a lot of scar tissue. A part of what I've found and found very early in my career is that when you're able to have a conversation with a buyer about them, that matters.
That's important. Hard to do for a lot of salespeople, right?
It takes acumen. It takes a significant amount of time in research. It's outside of the body of expertise of a lot of sales guys.
So that first conversation you find historically has been the most difficult one to have?
If it's a great conversation, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And the old adage, you only get one chance to make a first impression. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. And if my first impression is, "Hi, Joe, could you tell me about your strategic objectives?" The answer is going to be, "Get out of my office
right,
and please don't ever come
this.
Back." That's right. That's exactly right.
So I want to take this out of the theoretical for a moment and, do this for me like I
often do. It's all about you.
it's partially my show, right? Okay, so Business Radio X, we're a business as well, and we would like for community banks to consider underwriting us at the studio level. We feel like our mission is very consistent with theirs. They want to serve the community. They want to meet other business-to-business folks. They make loans to them. And we feel like we have a great platform to serve the same group of people that they're serving. So for a community bank to underwrite a show, just like the Band of Coders underwrites this show, in our mind makes a lot of sense. So now I need to go talk to the presidents of community banks. And so I find a bank, ABC Bank.
That's
and I've
the
got
easy
your,
part, right?
And
to,
I've got,
to just find a list of banks. Because salespeople, they can find that, right?
You can find the list of banks. Yep, go ahead.
All right, so I've got it, and I decide, okay, I'm going after AB's. No, let's Signature Bank right down here.
Right.
These guys are a community bank. We ought to have a conversation with them at some point about underwriting a studio. All right, so now I've got your tool. Walk me through how
now
I
Now what
use
happens?
It.
So we're going to create a model in our tool based on your experiences with some of your existing customers.
Okay.
And from that model, project the value of your product, which is exposure for that bank on
right.
your radio program, project that model onto your target bank prospect and say, our program, our solution, so to speak, would have this kind of results for your bank based on our experience with other institutions who have advertised, mm-hmm. who have underwritten our show. And that would be the kind of content that could be produced in a matter of a few minutes out of the Decision Link system that might otherwise take, some backroom analyst some significant amount of time to research and produce that content.
So if we were to work with Decision Link, the first thing you're going to do is help us create this initial content that all the future content's going to be coming from.
That's right. And it's going to be based on your experiences
right.
in the marketplace.
We're going to take existing data that we already have based on previous clients. You're going to take that data and put it in your system so that when a future sales call happens, you can mine that existing data.
You can mine that data and project it onto, and you might have one bank that's a size of 100 and another bank that's a size of 250, and they've got different characteristics and so forth. The Decision Link system is going to model the estimation for them based on their characteristics applied by the model we created for your solution.
Now, what if I'm in a sales call and I tell them, well, this was built on 100 and you have 200, and they go, whoa, I don't have 200, I have 300. Can I make a change like
you
that,
make
or is
the,
that
make the change on your tablet or your smartphone?
So,
right
like
there, it,
literally,
right there with the
instantaneously,
customer.
I can go
That's
back
right.
to these key data points and then plug them in, and then I have the new updated version of this.
As opposed to assuming that I even have that kind of content, as opposed to okay, let me write that down, take it back
right.
to
and
a guy, give it in the back
couple
room.
Days, right.
I'll get back to you in a couple of days,
right.
and you have to go hunt the guy down, and and so forth. Absolutely, and that's a big part of the iterative nature of building a business case is you don't know from the outside looking in what the
you're just taking a best guess.
You're taking an educated estimate based on your historical actuals and engaging with a prospect, and they're going to feed you information based on the fact that, hey, here's somebody that's done some homework, that's thinking about me.
Right.
I'm going to invest in that. They may not even tell you what the actual numbers are. It might be proprietary information.
Sure.
It might be an embarrassment to them. It might be a trade secret. But the notion of having an estimate that they can build off the business case and come up with something tangible to justify underwriting your show, that's the target.
Well, and it sounds to me like it could be perpetually self-improving. So we go on the sales call, we talk to the president of that bank, and he says, well, you know, we work with a lot of left-handed people. That's really important. We know that we do, too, but we never really thought about it. So we could go back to that initial database and make
and
sure that
and
that's—
And add that to the mix,
add
right?
that to the mix,
that's
right?
That's right. One of our customers started out with three products and about 20 performance indicators,
right.
metrics. And today they've got 15 products, about 100 indicators across a dozen industries and all kind of iterations because you learn as you go.
Right, and you want to learn from the horse's mouth, not your brain, right, well, in a whiteboard room with your other salespeople.
That's right, and you want the learnings to be things that can be accommodated on the fly. For instance, you might be in that call, and it's not a matter of saying, we don't have 200, we have 300. By the way, we also count this thing over here. You create a metric on the fly, basically, for these new performance indicators or metrics along the way. So it is a learning and an iterative situation. It's the way business works. It's the way the world works.
Right. It has to be nimble enough to accommodate that.
That's right.
How about sales and marketing in your own shop? Is it largely you, or do you have a team, and do they use this stuff? Or how do you go about having a conversation like this? Because it's a very compelling conversation now that you've sat down with me and explained it a little bit.
Yeah, we use our system for all of our prospects. We won't have a conversation without it because, first off, it's a little bit crude, but it's called eating your own dog food. If you don't use what you're selling, why, you know, how
right.
can you? How
like
can
you can't go, well, the first thing you do is get a billboard, right? Like that wouldn't be
right.
congruent with your methodology, right?
No, so we use it. We're a small company. I wear a lot of hats, primary sales guy as well. But we got some great partners. A company based here in Atlanta called TechCXO has about 50 C-level executive partners that consult in the technology industry. They have modeled the things they do within DecisionLink. We'll announce the largest sales training company in the world in a few weeks as a partner of DecisionLink. So I'm the primary sales guy now, but won't be for long.
So now, but you're selling to salespeople or sales managers?
Sales management. We sell to businesses that have salespeople working for them. So we don't sell to individual sales reps yet. The challenge is this whole notion of creating a model. That's a subject matter expert job.
Mm-hmm.
Using the model is a sales guy's job.
Right.
So if you think of the process of building maps, when the maps were originally built, they sent out explorers and then surveyors and then cartographers and map makers and so on and so forth, and they produced these paper things that we used to use, and now we just use our phone
right.
and say, tell me how to get to such and such location, One Glen Lake Parkway, today. So there's a difference between being a map maker and a map user. We hope to get to the point where the individual sales rep could make their own maps along the way. We're not quite there yet.
So, but since it's software as a service, not unlike how we might use Salesforce to keep up with our prospects, we could also have a salesperson go in and harvest from this most recent engagement new data, new trends, new things that were important. And they could park it somewhere so that could be drawn on for future engagements, either by that person or someone else on the team.
Yeah, that's right. So if you can use our engine to identify your value proposition for a single organization, well, we built an analytics tool so you can process bulk. Let's say there's 1,000 organizations that you could potentially sell your underwriting capabilities to, we have an analytics capability that would say, what are the 100 that you have the highest value for? And go call on those guys.
Wow. That's pretty strong.
It most certainly
is. So it works. The sweet spot is complex sales. It's not transactional sales, right?
No. No, it's not transactional sales. So businesses that sell to businesses and say, you know, what's the definition of a complex sale? You know, more than two or three sales calls is maybe a rudimentary way to describe it. But business to business, relatively high ticket. I mean, we've got one customer that their average sale price is $50,000. I've got a fundamental belief that every deal has a business case, and nobody spends any money without saying, I'm going to spend 50 grand, and for that 50 grand, here's what I'm going to get. And ultimately, there's a business case associated with that that says what I'm going to get is worth the expenditure. So, you know, whatever the size, I don't think it goes down to the transactional level. But a business case can be produced in a, you know, very short period of time at a very low cost. And we basically have lowered the bar as to how big a deal has to be in order to be able to produce what's needed to, you know, to go out and pursue and close deals.
Well, I would certainly think that this service would lend itself to professional services, capital equipment, certainly any sale that would involve multiple buying influences where you got to hit, you know, this guy cares about these three things and this guy could care less about that, but you better hit these 2 points. And hit. I would think it would lend itself to all of that.
The marketplace is pretty big. We're focused right now in the technology, intellectual property world. Basically, we don't have the resources to chase everything in sight, and that's the world that we came out of experientially. But exactly, and you bring up an interesting point. I may have a solution that for a certain prospect has $100 million in annual value. $25 million of that value is to the manufacturing head of manufacturing, $50 million to the head of sales, $15 million to the marketing guy, and the balance is to the customer services guy. If I'm talking to the customer services guy, I don't want to be talking about $100 million. I want to be talking about the part that matters to him.
Exactly.
And that's we call that persona-based marketing, and that's a part of the distilling of a value proposition that our system creates.
So where can our listeners go to learn more, set up, and maybe have a substantive conversation with you or somebody on your team about this?
So Jim Berryhill, my email address, easyceo@decisionlink.com. Visit www.decisionlink, all one word, decisionlink.com, and we will pay attention to you.
Now, you mentioned a client here in town, but you have clients all over, right? This is not just an Atlanta-based thing, right?
Oh, that's right. We've got international clients. So early-stage company, but we've got big customers like McAfee, the security guys, and General Electric, and we've got small companies you've never heard of. One of the leading Six Sigma practitioners in the consumer packaged goods industry is a customer and partner of ours. One of the beauties of the cloud is you can deliver anywhere and effectively.
But don't you think it would be – I think – here's an idea. I think it might be fun to have you come in with one of your local clients and we talk with them about their experience of your service from their perspective.
We'd be delighted to do that.
You'd be up for that?
We sure would. We sure would.
I really no. I think that would make for a very interesting segment, I think.
Right, to see how they took it. I guess since your early stage, they haven't you know, they had a trust. There was a bit of a leap of faith in there.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, a big part of the leap of faith is to produce this kind of content, we're used to having expert types in a back office, and they take 3 weeks to do, and it costs $45,000 or $50,000.
Exactly.
And how in the world can you automate that?
Right.
And that's a fair question. That's a fair question. it's not dissimilar to, you know, when Henry Ford put the production line into the process of manufacturing automobiles, and in a short period of time, automobiles were affordable by most American families.
Right.
When previously they were the domain of the rich who had a couple of mechanics that worked for them, and so on and so forth. And that's the beauty of automation, and what we brought to this process. But it does take a leap of faith. It's like, I had to spend $50,000 to get this, and now you're telling me I can have it for, you know, for a couple bucks.
Yeah. So you have a local client that would come on and,
sure,
and tell the story?
Absolutely.
Well, and I think they would embrace the idea, but we can sweeten the pot because it will be an interesting conversation to get that perspective. But we can also, if you want, we'll ask him some of the questions that you do to gather your data, and we'll sweeten his database.
Challenge him too. The person I'm thinking about needs to have somebody asking him hard questions.
All right, well, there you go. We'll dig deeper on air. We'll have him answer the questions. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio, and we will look forward to having you back. That'll be a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And that's decisionlink.com.
Decisionlink.com. All right. Next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have with us back in the studio, and which I guess says something. He was willing to come back and visit with us. Mm-hmm. President and CEO with VDART, Mr. Sid Ahmed. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me again.
So we had you in our Midtown studio.
That's correct.
Now you ventured off and came to our Sandy Springs studio. So why don't you tell our listeners, VDART, what are you guys doing for folks?
We are an information technology staffing firm headquartered out of Atlanta, Georgia. And we have offices in New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. But in terms of our services, 85% of our business happens in the U.S. The rest comes from Mexico, Canada, Brazil, Europe, Australia, and India.
So you're a staffing firm?
That's correct, yeah.
And then the specialties that you're staffing?
Yeah, we specialize in three core areas. One is ERP, which is primarily Oracle applications and SAP. The second area is in business intelligence, which is more specifically geared towards Hyperion. And the third area is in infrastructure services.
Now, the last time we talked,
yep,
you were on air with, wasn't it some folks from the Georgia Minority Supplier Development
That's
Council?
Correct.
How impressed are you that I remembered what
That's
that whole acronym says?
There was a lot of letters there.
But you had won something or something?
Yeah, that point in time when we were here, I was here with Veronica and Carmitria Burton. We were going through a mentor-protege program in Delta Airlines.
With Delta, yeah.
That's
correct,
right.
Yeah.
So how'd that go?
It went fabulous. But actually, when we had that program, we were just about to be done with the mentor-protege program. It was a phenomenal program where we graduated out of that. Now we just entered into another mentor protege program with Accenture. Very lucky to be a part of that program. That's like an 18-month program. It happens in Chicago where we have our entire leadership team go for this program every once in 2 months, spend about 2-3 days out there with the Accenture folks. So a terrific mentor protege program. Yep.
So now are you mentoring anybody or you're still protegeing?
We are still protegeing. We are a small company.
I know. So now, what is your backstory? How did you get involved in this business?
In
staffing.
Information. Okay. So my career spans about 20 years, and it's just the initial 3 years, and I have a bachelor's in computer science. So the initial 3 years, I was in training, curriculum development. So when Jim was talking about it, I was able to relate to content development.
Right.
So I didn't know how the algorithm works, though. I'm still trying to think. But as I proceeded, as I moved on in my career, I've been all along in technology staffing. So in my previous stint, just about 7 years, 6 years ago, I worked for a small business, grew the company from a $2 to a $22 million firm. I was heading the sales. So before then, I decided to exit and start something on my own.
And you saw this need for staffing because, I mean, that's one of the hardest positions to fill is IT staffing, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of demand for staffing. Staffing has always been on the rise in the U.S. market and worldwide as well.
Mm-hmm.
But U.S. market is a very, very mature market when compared to any other country in the world. So staffing plays a very big role, and especially because predominantly most of the technologies are actually come out in the U.S. They are developed in the U.S.
Right.
And they are launched in the U.S. So the need for people or resources to do development in that area is here. So that's the reason why it's a mature market.
So is it really competitive to get the – I'm not even sure I understand how it works, but let's say, I don't know, Coca-Cola mm-hmm. needs some tech people.
Correct.
Is it hard to get that account? Do you have to fight for that account? Or are they just opening up to everybody and you just have to go get the good people? Or
Wish it was that simple.
So yeah, speak to that. How does that work? I'm interested to hear about the competitive landscape. And just like I was with Jim, I'm always interested in how the stuff gets sold.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. It's a very, very competitive landscape. You need to have a niche in the industry. Staffing could be any staffing in information technology. You could talk about a help desk resource who comes in, who is basically helping you over the phone or helping you at your desk in terms of fixing your email or your desktop or your laptop, to a programmer who develops complex code, or to a program manager who manages a large program. So when you spoke about this particular example, like Coke, does it open doors to everybody? No, it's a long list. In the sense, it's a waiting list for about a couple of years before you get a shot at it.
Wow.
And you got to be at your best.
So then they're vetting a lot of people, and there are a lot of people knocking on their door to be the supplier
Absolutely.
For the IT talent. So what makes you guys different? How are you able to kind of stand above the crowd?
Right. The way we stand out of the crowd is because of the expertise what we have, the three core areas of expertise.
Right. So you got really niche and focused on three
Absolutely.
Areas that you can be the best in class.
Correct.
Right?
And the second biggest differentiator is all these corporations are multinational corporations. They need resources in the U.S. They need resources in Brazil. Sometimes they need resources in Timbuktu. You never know. So the capability what we have is in delivering or deploying resources worldwide.
So will your resources come from here and you send them to Timbuktu, or you have Timbuktu resources?
We have Timbuktu resources.
Wow.
So the way we have our business, one of the key reasons of our growth is because we've been able to utilize local resources. In the U.S., our entire resources, the pool of resources, what we utilize is local resources. And so in every country, that's the way it is.
So is that part of why you won the STAR Partner?
Oh, yes. Thing? Oh, fabulous. Thanks for bringing that up. So we just, this is one of our elite customers. We call it as a platinum customer. It's called as HCL Technologies. It's a $8 billion largest system, one of the largest system integrators based out of India. But they are a global company with over 100,000 people worldwide. And we just won the STAR Partner Award. And it's the award is for MVP being the most valuable partner to HCL. And basically, this was an award for serving in multiple geographies. So we deploy resources for them in the U.S., in Canada, in Mexico, in India. So
right, because most other companies don't have those kind of resources,
Absolutely.
Right?
So Absolutely.
And you can stand out, and they obviously the customers appreciate that ability.
Fabulous. Yep, you're just right.
Well, maybe you could use somebody to go scout talent in the Caribbean from time to time. Lee and I would be happy to do it.
Right.
We could go, we could interview him, we could send you the audio. Right?
Absolutely. You bet.
I'd like to shift gears here a little bit if we
sure.
could. You talked about being inside a very successful organization in sales capacity and having a great deal to do with their growth. And then you made the transition to entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
So I'd be real interested in anything specific you had to say about that or any story that you might be willing to relate. But I would be particularly interested to hear about any mistakes or lessons learned that you might be willing to share with our listeners and save them a little scar tissue, as Lee calls it.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to share. One of the key things, which, knock on wood, I haven't made a mistake so far. Right?
So far? Mistake-free? Congratulations.
That's
Absolutely.
Great.
But I constantly see this happening in young entrepreneurs who start their business. They neither have a strong business plan nor a strong customer base. They are just reliant upon some piece of information, what they have, thinking that it could be a business idea.
Uh-huh.
Unless and until
you have... So they put too much value on that idea?
Absolutely. You should have a mentor or a coach, a business coach, whom you go back to, relate this idea, try and find out, is this an idea which is going to click? You might have the gut that it might click, but unless and until you have experimented this idea elsewhere while working with somebody else or working for another organization, if it's a completely brand new idea, yes, I understand. But if it's not, if you're not reinventing the wheel, if it is just a standard idea, I think what you should do is you should first try and make sure you have customers, you have the resources. Resources meaning money, resources meaning the talent pool, what you require to make this happen. Unless and until you don't have that, I don't think it's a great idea to just jump into it blindly like that.
Now, part of your strategy has been this pursuing mentors and being a protege.
Absolutely.
And then to be a protege, it takes a certain level of humbleness, doesn't it?
Very true. Very true. One of the key things is in a mentor protege program, or even in a coach and a protege relationship, it is very, very important that you need to embrace every idea which comes out of the mentor or every idea which comes out from the coach. Because every idea could be just so inspirational and you can really utilize it in one form or the other throughout your career.
And so I want to talk about the money.
Sure.
Here you are, you got this good job. You're kicking it in this sales capacity, and you decide to be an entrepreneur. Did you go borrow money? Did you just do it all bootstrapped? And what advice, if any, do you have to offer others on?
So here's what I did. I'll share the secret. Okay. So I had two kids at that time, and both of them, well, nice house to live in and all of that. I gave up everything, moved into an apartment, and I thought to myself, next 12 months, even if I don't make a penny, do I have enough money to pay for my children's education, live in an apartment, take care of my family? That's all I was interested in, and that's what I did. And I just made sure that I had an earnings or savings which can take me through 12 months, and the next 12 months I went without a paycheck. In the 6 month, I was able to actually generate my own pay stubs, you know. So
you put all the chips on the table then?
That's correct, yeah. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what I did. And followed by which you always have these cash flow issues in the business.
Right.
So you have to break some CDs, borrow some money from your friends, and all of that. That comes in.
But you largely bit the bullet, bootstrapped it, and then tried to manage your money as frugally as well as you could.
Absolutely.
And then you had a mentor prior to pulling the trigger on this?
Yes, I did have a mentor prior to pulling the trigger as well.
You had the idea in your head, and that wasn't enough. You knew that. So you go, I'm going to get a mentor. I'm going to start maybe lining up some potential clients so we can have these conversations so I can hit the ground running.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's precisely the strategy what I take. And followed at a later point in time, right, once I started the company as well, I made sure that I had a coach always backing me up or a mentor backing me up, running the ideas by, you know. So that really helped.
Now, with your permission, I want to bring Jim Berryhill back into the conversation.
He's a sales expert. You knew that, right?
Absolutely.
Your experience and your general take on this idea of a mentor or getting a board of advisors, that kind of speak to that from your perspective a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, so first off, you can make a lot of mistakes doing it by yourself. And the notion of having some folks who have made some mistakes on their own and learning from theirs is probably a really good idea. We've got a rich set of advisors and friends to our business, both in our advisory board, which represent four or five C-level executives who understand the pain that we're trying to address and don't mind dishing out some pain to us in how we're going about it. And then in our investors group, we've got a half a dozen C-level executives as well who, same sort of thing, they put their money and their time and their intellect where their mouth is. So I applaud you on that particular point because you know, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. My partner is a really smart guy, but we're just a couple of guys. You know, we're just a couple of people with a limited set of experience. So your advisors, your customers, and then your trusted colleagues. You know, that body of input is going to help shape you to do what makes best sense and has a chance to be effective. You're not going to nail it just because you have that.
Right, and still, it's still a dice roll. You know, even with all this advice, having your own business, there's a lot of saboteurs out there.
Well, it's a competitive world, right?
Yourself included.
Exactly.
As a saboteur, right?
Exactly. If you're trying to be disruptive, and that's what we're doing.
Right.
If you're seeking to be disruptive, you're going to be disrupting somebody, right? and those somebodies don't exactly, aren't exactly going to lay down and so forth. So, but you know, I love the competitive marketplace, and if at the end of the day, you know, I spent 30 years in sales and sales management. There's a lot of conversation out there about sales productivity, sales enablement, sales enhancement. There aren't many doing much for the sales guy.
Right.
They're doing it for management, for sales operations, for marketing. No offense to marketing guys in the room, et cetera. But the sales guy, the only thing ever gets asked of the sales guy is, what are you doing this month?
That's right.
Yeah,
what are
your numbers?
What are you doing this month?
Right.
So we're trying to do something for the, you know, for that guy or gal. So
okay, it's time to talk about me again. So because no, Lee and I find ourselves in, you know, faced with many of these same issues. And what I want to ask both of you, and I'd like to go back to Sid first. How do you pick your advisors? How do you pick your mentors? Where do you look for people to get advice from?
Oh, excellent question. So one of the key things what I generally do is I'm very inquisitive about knowing about others. You know, when I say, for example, if I get to meet Jim, I'm going to ask him where he's from, what he does, and I try to understand what his strengths are and basically approach him and ask him, would you be interested in being my coach? It's one of the advices which I've got from Jack Lane from Accenture, and he said, you know, go and ask people whether they would be interested in being your coach or your mentor. It could be a stranger. It doesn't really matter. But as long as you've built the trust relationship, once you have the trust in that particular individual, you go out, ask for help, and try to make them your coach.
And you found that people are open to that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I bet you a lot of people just, it wouldn't even occur to them to do something like that.
No, generally people shy away from that. I don't know, for some odd reason, they try to either keep that, think that this person is going to take away my business idea. That's not what it is. You're not going to go ahead and reveal, even if you reveal the entire business plan, it takes some real true metal to implement your business plan and get going. It just doesn't happen like that, you know.
And the mentor is probably flattered that you asked them.
You're absolutely right. Bang on target. That's what it is. And people really want to help.
And you may or may not necessarily have to pay a fee for...
Technically, all of this is free. You get your mentors.
So you don't
free.
Necessarily have to go shopping and say, we'll pay X amount for you to give us advice.
Absolutely not.
And they're happy to help. So I don't know why, but nobody's ever asked me.
I'm gonna ask you the question.
I will start keeping score, see who asked first. Were they asked me or Lee? Or Jim, anything to add to that as far as finding the people to get the advice from?
So early in my sales career, I was at a sales kickoff meeting, my first sales kickoff meeting for a company I worked for. I was about 26 years old, and I had the good fortune to get exposed to a guy who was like, he was the king of the hill. And I decided to adopt, that guy's going to be my mentor. And he didn't know it. And it took a little while for me to, you know, convince him of the value of taking me under wing. But that was enormously productive in my career. For our current company, I got some people involved that I knew and trusted. But also, there's a big world of sales productivity experts out there. If you go out and look for bloggers on sales productivity, there's about 10,000 of them. Yeah. Well, I spent about 6 months reading a whole bunch of them. And I selected a couple of guys that's like, hey, these guys stand out. And I approached them, and one of them wasn't really able to, but the other one became part of our trusted inner circle of our business, guy I'd never met before.
Absolutely.
So on and so forth. So what Sid's talking about is spot on. Finding somebody you think's going to bring something to the table, and then, you know, and then
ask them.
And you
never know what's going to happen when you ask them, right?
Well, Sid, short of Lee being your next mentor, what do you need now and next, and what can we do to help, man?
That's right. What are you looking for?
What are we looking for right now? Our next target is, we unfolded our Vision 2016. You know our numbers in terms of where our headcount is. We want to be double by 2016, which means automatically it'll put us in terms of our revenues also will double. So that's what our next target is, what we are looking for. Atlanta is a great place to be. We still are hunting for customers in a big way, establishing our presence in the Atlanta marketplace.
Right here in Atlanta. You really want to have a strong customer
base.
Absolutely.
So now, who is the person at the firm you want to have the conversation with? The CIOs, the CTOs?
The CIOs, CTOs, people who are responsible, the CPOs, Chief Procurement Officers. Those are the kind of conversations what we technically have to get into a corporation.
And then what size company is your sweet spot?
90% of our customers right now are billion-dollar customers.
Uh-huh.
But we cater to small businesses as well, small, medium-sized businesses as well. Having said that, our sweet spot is with large system integrators, which are like a couple of billion-dollar system integrators with volume-based requirements. So we don't do the ones and twos opportunity. Mm-hmm. We technically do like in hundreds or thousands.
But there's enough of that here in Atlanta that you do want to take a focus here in Atlanta?
Absolutely, absolutely.
How many firms of that size are there here?
There are at least a dozen firms.
And then so you spend your time working to get in to the right person to you have the meaningful conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So how are you getting that meeting? Or you got a guys knocking on the door, picking up the phone? How are they getting that first meeting?
Going to get decision link.
That's right, going to send them the case study, right?
Decision
Jim link. Will hook you up. But no, it's got to be tough, right? You mentioned long waiting line for Coke. Or you
absolutely.
Gotta do something.
It is relationships what you build over a period of time, which is going to land opportunities for you. We are here for the long run. You know, the long haul. It doesn't happen overnight. So today we start courting a customer, technically about 5 years, 6 years down the line is when we get a shot at it.
Man, these guys are long-term thinkers.
That's right. So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the website?
It's www.vdartinc.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you so much for having me again, and I really appreciate it. I need to make you both as my mentors, specifically or more on the PR side. Huh? I'm going to be talking about it.
All right. All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, and a special thanks to our underwriter of this show, Band of Coders. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.